the story. This is the story of a miracle. A miracle created by the spirit of self-sacrifice and the heroism of a Guppy crew. In the role of Quartermaster Stroh, Scott Brady relates the story of an Arctic miracle.
4255.
Just speed.
7 knots, sir.
All right, let's take her up. All engines ahead, full speed.
All engines ahead, full speed. Aye, aye.
And not, sir. Nuts. What a toll.
That was how we begun the test run of the USS Ticino, a new type of submarine. This was the Guppy, the successor to the Pigboat. Why Guppy? All the cumbersome equipment which had flooded the decks of the old type sub was gone. This new ship did resemble a Guppy, that streamlined little minnow, no more than 2 inches long. The resemblance stopped there. Here was a vessel that would ship. A submarine that breathed underwater. How did it differ from the big boat? Well, we learned more about that as we continued our test.
It's certainly an unpleasant noise. Guess we'll have to get used to it, though.
Hey, Strauss, what is that?
That's the valve on the snorkel. I'll tell you more about it when we're off duty. Up periscope.
Periscope up, sir.
Right, golly, can look right into the snorkel tube with this thing. Well, let's head for home. All ahead. Full.
Hey, Wilkes, how come we aren't eating on the Guppy?
Well, the Cachino doesn't have all our galley equipment installed yet.
What's the drink, Mac?
A Moke.
Moke, yeah, me too. Dad, about that noise on the sub.
That, my son, was a snorkel tube. It's very simple in theory. Yeah, let's get over here.
Oh?
Well, at the beginning of the beginning, you see the snorkel tube is an air intake.
Yeah?
Does away with the necessity to surface for recharging the battery. You don't have air to operate. Clear so far?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's a is that good?
Sure, it's good. Now, a sub can cruise underwater on its engine without having to surface the battery recharge.
Uh-huh.
And all you'll be able to see is a snorkel tube from the periscope.
Yeah. Well, explain me one thing. What keeps the water from running down the tube into the engine?
You see, that accounts for the noise you heard. Every time a wave washes over the intake, a flap valve automatically closes. And as the wave goes, it opens again.
Uh-huh. Well, if the tube closes up half the time, where's the air come from to run the diesel?
In the salt.
Oh, here. What's the matter, Wills? Your stuff?
No, not yet. Remember every once in a while how the air in the sub changed while we were cruising in periscope depth?
Yeah, well, my ears got all stopped up. Well,
every time that flapper closes, the engines draw air from inside the boat.
Oh, and on a long run, we all suffocate, right?
No, wrong. Although, in your case, I may recommend it there.
Hey.
But when the air pressure gets to a certain low, the diesels are automatically cut off. Temporarily.
Now, let's suppose we're cruising below snorkel depth. How's the air get down then?
And we go back on the old system. Batteries. Anything else?
Yeah. Pass me the bread.
Here.
During the following week, we made more test runs. On our final test, we took the longest trip we had made at any time. We cruised for several days until we were off Cape Sable. Performance of the casino is almost perfect.
What's our speed?
10 knots.
This is sonar. Range 4,000 yards.
Up periscope.
Periscope up, sir.
Give me another bearing.
Contact is 185. Range 3,700.
Conning tower, aye. Right. Sir, contact is moving at about 10 knots, closing astern.
Radio contact?
Not yet, sir.
Tell him to give it a try. Quartermaster?
Try a sharp turn to starboard. See if we can intercept it.
Whatever it is. Right full rudder.
Course 310, sir.
What's the course of our
contact? Contact running 310, sir. Just off our 14, 2,000 yards.
Fine. We're running parallel.
That radio makes contact. They say it's another sub.
What's the time?
15:30, sir.
Right on time. That should be the test.
Well, yes, sir. sure it is.
No radio to advise them that we're servicing for rendezvous.
The appearance of the Tusk came as a surprise to the crew. We didn't know that a rendezvous had been scheduled. The captain later explained that he wanted to see if we could do it without knowing that it was a must. Across the water from us, the Tusk rode the Whitecaps, an exact duplicate of our ship. She'd come up from Norfolk to join us here. We joined together for a few days more of maneuvers and trials, and returned to the sub-base to London. Ordinarily, we were on limited liberty, but for the next few weeks, we had every night off. Leaves were granted freely. And one night, the crews of both vessels were called to meet at quarters, and our skipper got up to speak.
Gentlemen, quiet, please. Then, we called you here in order to advise you of the orders that we received. I'll make it brief. The Pacino and the Tusk have been ordered to conduct cold weather operations. As soon as weather conditions in the north permit, we are heading for the Greenland Sea, the Arctic Circle. Weather permitting, H hour is at 0700 tomorrow.
And the weather did permit our departure at 0700. Our first port of call was Iceland. After replenishing our supplies, we headed north once again. Crossing the Arctic Circle, we found ourselves heading to the desolate, immense Greenland Sea. Everything was going according to schedule as we cruised just beneath the surface using our snorkels. From time to time, we would surface to stand watch. The cold was so bitter that no man could remain exposed for more than a half an hour. Finally, the skipper ordered topside watch discontinued entirely. During the second day out from Iceland, the wind began to increase in intensity, and we found that we were beginning to pitch violently.
Captain, here's the last weather report we've received.
Well, I guess we're in for a blow.
But, sir, the weather reports we had when we left...
They can never be sure about the weather up here.
I guess not.
We're 400 miles north of the Arctic Circle. There aren't many habitations in this neighborhood. We'll just have to weather it out. Davis, take a message to the Tusk.
There's no rain squall. We're really getting battered.
Get the battle station men on the controls. We're going down.
How far, sir?
Until we're in quieter water. Secure the engines. Shift to battery power.
Aye, sir.
All control handlers report to your stations. Torpedo man and other personnel remain where you are. Control handlers, to your battle stations.
Depth 65 feet, sir.
Take her down to 100. We'll try it there. Still too rough. We'll have to go down more. Clifford,
order... Captain, the hydrogen indicator's in the red. Something's wrong.
The smoking lamp is out. Clifford! Clifford! Where's the diving officer?
Over here, sir.
Sir, quick. I'm going to the conning tower. Signal the Tusk that we have a fire. Stand by the surface.
Hold that set, sir. Both plants running, ready to surface.
Surface!
Blow bow buoyancy. Blow forward group. Blow aft group.
Angling sharply, the big boat shot up like a porpoise. With no doubt would it hit the surface. The motion changed abruptly. I was up in the conning tower with the skipper, and we could hear the men swearing down below as they were knocked around. Reaching over his head, the skipper opened the hatch, leading to the weather bridge. The water slopped through the hatch as we climbed out.
I'm going to use this as my command station. Hang on to the windbreak.
Aye, sir. Can we maneuver from here?
I think so. And we can get some ventilation down through the hatch. You see the Tusk?
No, sir. Too much more.
Captain from executive officer.
What's that?
The outboard squad, boss, sir. The deck, I think.
Captain from executive officer.
Go ahead.
Smoke and heat have driven everyone from the after battery compartment. We've thrown in CO2 fire extinguishers. I'll be in the forward engine room, sir.
Very well. Take charge and keep me informed.
Sir, there's a Tusk off Port B.
Thank God you got our message.
Captain.
Gas. Smells like burnt rubber. A lot of the men are passing out.
Get all hands, hot line, quick.
But, sir, there are about 60 men up for
it. Get the men up here. Gross, stand by to lash into the main deck with clear water. Break out plenty of line. Make damn sure you have a line before you go up there. We don't want anyone overboard.
Aye, aye, sir.
Damage control, this is the captain. Let me talk to the executive officer.
Right speaking, sir.
There's gas board. How is it back there?
Well, it's okay here, sir, but hydrogen's building up in the battery compartment. There's no ventilation. Another explosion any second, maybe.
What?
Another explosion any second, maybe. We've got to eliminate the short circuit to stop the hydrogen. Martinez is in the maneuvering room trying to clear the circuits now.
How many men are
there? You got 5 in the damage control party, sir, and 13 in engineering spaces.
Very well.
Fire off, set, sir.
Good. We have 78 men on board. 13 of them are aft, the executive officer. That means we have 60 forward to take care of.
Men to be crammed into the bridge space designed for 7. We lashed the conning tower hatch open so it wouldn't fall on the men. One by one, we helped them onto the deck. Those who were unconscious from the fumes were lifted through first. There were 8 of them. A huge wave washed over them and they began to groan and stir. Our chief hospital corpsman applied artificial respiration. Many of the men who were coming up through the hatch were in underclothes. They had been asleep and had no time to grab clothing. The skipper had a tough choice. A couple of hours out here and they'd die from exposure. Down there in the fumes, they'd probably all die in a few minutes. Then, just as the last man had come up through the hatch, a huge wave suddenly swallowed the entire stern of the Cochino. The ship convulsed all over as if a mine had exploded under it.
Sounded pretty bad.
Sir, there's been a terrible explosion, aft. 5 men badly injured. They need the hospital corpsman and medical supplies.
We waited hopelessly on the bridge, wondering what was happening below.
Found the trouble. The ammeters on the control panel show that battery 4 is discharging into battery 3. That's where the hydrogen is generating.
Batteries 3 and 4?
Yes, sir. I pulled all the switches aft. We have to pull the disconnects in the battery compartment itself. It's our only answer.
All right, I'm going in.
You'll never get out alive, sir.
Sparks, give me your rescue breathing apparatus.
You'll never get out alive,
sir. I said give it to me.
Let me help you. All right. You men bring that safety line and hook it onto the commander.
All right. You know the signals. 1 pull means give me more round. 2 pulls mean take out the slack. 3 means drag me out of the place, but fast.
Yes, sir.
All right, now all of you men get back. I go way aft by the bulkhead. There I go.
Wait. Here, you'll need rubber gloves.
The exec put on the gloves, sprung to the door, and grabbed a quick opening lever. Hot metal burned his hand through the gloves. A hollow boom echoed from the battery room. Wright was thinking to himself.
If we don't do something quick, it'll be good night for the Cochino.
Grabbing the handle with both hands, he used his weight on the lever, but the door wouldn't open. His hands were terribly burned, but in his anxiety to get in and pull the switches, he didn't think about them. He hurled his full weight against the door and yanked. The door opened and Wright fell backward. The released gas whistled out, followed by billows of black smoke. Even through the breathing apparatus, he could smell the acrid gas, but he could see nothing through the smoke. He put his hands out in front of him, groping toward the spot where the switches were. And suddenly, without warning, an avalanche of white flame belched out, engulfing him and knocking him down. He lay on the deck, almost naked. All his clothes had been burned off except his shoes. With almost the entire front of his body charred, he dragged himself across the deck and with superhuman effort, slowly pushed the door of the engine room shut and secured it.
Sir, let's get out of here. The whole compartment's on fire. You men get back to the after engine room.
Pain and feet, and they're pretty badly burned.
Don't worry about us. We're all right.
Can you make it, Commander?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Now what?
Some of the hydrogen is starting to mix with the air. The diesels are sucking it in.
What'll it do?
It's causing the engines to run wild. They're liable to disintegrate. Petey, you two, pull these levers. Maybe we can shut off the fuel supply.
Lend a hand. Help the Commander. Get him into the after torpedo room. I'll be along in a minute.
5 men moved after the torpedo room. The men on watch there gave them the first aid. A small supply of petrolatum was quickly used up, and the amateur doctors smeared the burned men with ball-bearing grease.
We've lost our auxiliary power.
The after diesels have stopped. Nothing's running now.
What are we going to do now?
Joe, we're going to get off our butts and get this bucket running again. What do you think?
The captain reviewed our position. It looked pretty hopeless. Lower in infernos. hydrogen and noxious fumes were still being. Five men in the torpedo room were seriously injured, one of them likely to die at any moment. Gas down below was leaking aft, and the 13 men isolated there were complaining of headaches. 47 men were lashed to the bridge, exposed to the shrieking wind and the pounding ocean. The Cachino had no electricity or propulsion.
Captain, the Tusk is getting ready to shoot a line over to us.
All right, stand by to receive it.
They're sending over a raft of medical supplies.
I hope that line holds. Keep pulling on it. Richmond, Shelton, come over here.
Yes, sir.
John, if you can ride that rubber raft back to the Tusk, they can be told what's going on.
I'd like to try it, sir.
You'll need help, Captain. I'd like to go, too. Very well. Quickman?
Aye, sir.
I've a hazardous job for you. The stern's underwater most of the time. I want you to run a lifeline aft so that the pharmacist mate and medical supplies can get the after torpedo hatch into the men below.
I say I'll start now!
Look, boy, I didn't have to hear you know what your answer was. Where's Shelton and Philo? Up on the forecastle, sir.
Stop talking for a second. We'll shove off. Ride this baby like a surfboard, savvy?
Right.
Okay. Calm it a bit. Hit it!
In the raft of water, the wave, instead of receding when it hit deck level, continued to rise, lifting the Cachino with it. The raft capsized and then went under. The boys had their life jacket wrapped up the raft. The men on the Tusk began to haul the line, and the raft moved slowly away. After a tense 5 minutes, they reached the other sub and were halted, knocked unconscious, and goodbye.
You almost didn't make it, Taylor.
Yes, pretty close. How's Philo?
I think he's all right. Almost his mate's working on him. What's wrong, over on the Cachino?
Everything, sir. Almost the entire insides are blazed. Don't have any power. Some of the men are badly burned. The rest of them are tied down on the bridge. Come, Parker's arm burned and fill them with gas.
Lord, I didn't think you were that bad off. Well, we'll have to take that third
course. Man on the
forecastle!
Look out!
Man on the forecastle!
Man overboard! Man overboard!
Maneuvering room. Stand by for emergency speed.
Wave had broken over the deck, knocking the men on the forecastle to the deck. Before they had a chance to regain their feet, a second wave struck, sweeping all men on the equipment overboard. Even the 1.5-inch steel stanchions which supported the lifelines had been sheared off by the force of the water. 11 men had been swept into the water. They tried to hold hands in circles where they could stay together, but the sea was too rough and they drifted apart. Philo, who had still been unconscious when the wave struck, disappeared. Captain Worthington was trying to maneuver the ship to pick up as many of his men as he could.
All engines back home!
Take it.
All engines, stop.
This is coming over, Captain. We may have to abandon ship.
What?
From the Cachino, sir. We may have to abandon ship.
Acknowledge. Carbon engines back, hold. Port engine ahead, two turns.
Now it was time for a decision. Could the commander of the Tusk try to pick up his men? If he did, would the Cachino be able to stay afloat until he returned? Worthington decided to save as many of his own men as possible. When the Tusk pulled away and disappeared into the rain, none of us on the Cachino knew that she was trying to rescue her own men. All we knew was that we had signaled the Tusk that we might have to abandon ship, and she had departed from the area. The Cachino wallowed crazily in a gale, tons of water pouring over us, squeezing and choking all hands, especially the 47 men lashed outside the superstructure. Captain looked at the silent man. Blue was cold, and he looked at him.
Where's the chief torpedoman?
Yes, sir.
Woodward, get a safety line on.
Aye, sir.
Get all the men up here.
Up here on the bridge, sir?
Yes. We're going to pack them in. We have more protection from the sea here. You men on the bridge, think you can squeeze 47 men up here? Well, it's your job to see that we can. Start figuring.
Oh, start putting them in. Large men in that case by the bulkhead. Small men opening over there. You, sit on the flat. Push over, you guys. 24 more to pile on top of you.
My feet are freezing.
Here, put these on.
No, I'm okay, Captain.
I said to put them on.
Yes, sir.
Here, you look half dead. Take my jacket.
Captain, sir, half the engine room says the electricians have auxiliary power connected. In a few minutes...
Now she's alive again. Now we can move. Ruff, you have any idea how far we are from land?
About 200 miles, sir.
Captain, they say they got two engines going and are working the rudder by hand power, so not to go too fast.
Good, fine. Maybe we've got a chance. Send the word, Doc.
Captain, it is the Tusk.
Signalman, send over a message. Tell her to head for land and we'll try to follow.
Aye, sir.
Engine room for Captain.
Engine room.
We're going to try to make land. How are conditions down there? Is there anything we can do to help?
I don't think so, sir. Davis is steering by hand. He's manipulating the running control with a wrench, so we can't respond too quickly.
Davis is up here with me.
I mean Chief Torpedoman, Davis. The men here is in the compartment. They're sick from it. They'll keep the ship going somehow.
Right. Davis, be any word about the injured man?
Yes, sir. They seem to be in fair condition. Commander Wright's the worst, sir. He's pretty badly burned. I think he's dying.
How about the others?
Well, I said Commander Wright tried to lead them in a song. Couldn't even hold a tune, but when they saw him trying to cheer them up, he's asleep now, sir. Doc gave him another shot.
Well, maybe the brakes are coming our way now.
One slow hour passed by, and then another. Our battered sub limped and fought to maintain her station among the men on deck. Some of them were even joking. 5 hours we struggled on. The strain was too much. And then jumped again and again. This explosion wasn't within the ship. We knew that something had given away. Smoke spiraled from our snorkel mat. Big black billow.
Captain, the after engine room is on fire and filled with gas. It's been abandoned.
Order all hands, topside. Signalman, tell the Tusk to hurry that we need help.
Sir, I don't get any response from below.
We'll have to get the after hatch open so they can get out.
I'll do it, sir.
All right, Whitman, hang on the lifeline.
Sir,
Tusk is circling for an approach to the starboard bow.
Well, they just got a tough job to do. One mistake in seamanship and both of us might go down.
They brought closer and closer to us. Looking after our own ship, we could see the men beginning to climb out of the after torpedo hatch. Down below, the men were climbing out of the after torpedo room. Finally, only Commander Wright and Doc Easton, the pharmacist, were left. Wright lay naked on the bunk, his seared and blistered skin covered by a blanket. The morphine, having worn off, he rested easily. Half-shut eyes, he watched the others climb the hatch to the top side.
That leaves you, me, alone, Doc?
Yes. I already sent Pete enough to say we're on the way.
Top side. I'm staying here.
So you're getting out. Come on, let's go.
Oh, I'm comfortable now. Nothing will happen to this ship. She's still on an even keel.
Captain said to come up the bridge.
Oh, Captain did?
Yes, sir. Now, get this blanket off. Now, see if you can swing your legs down to the deck. Easy.
The old man ordered us topside, huh, Doc?
Yes, sir. Try to get up. Here. Hold yourself steady.
Yeah. Hey! What the hell?
It's a tough, sir. It's coming alongside. Sir, we've got to get you out of here. Let's see if we can get these trousers on you. Pull him up easy.
A lot of trouble for nothing. I can manage, all right.
Okay. Now over the ladder.
Okay. So I'm at the ladder. Now what? Nobody can touch me to lift me. My muscles are almost all burned out. So I can't do it alone. I can't even lift my foot to the first rung. I'm blocking Eason's chances. Oh, my God, I want to get out of here. And so does Eason. But you've got to give me a hand up the ladder.
Sir, I'm afraid this is going to hurt just a little bit, but...
Up we go!
Bear a hand up there!
All right, okay, easy.
Thanks. Hey, boys, thanks.
Stand up, sir?
Yeah, I'm all right. Why aren't they abandoning ship?
Just that plank between us and the Tusk, sir. The only way to get across. Anybody slips from it, it'll be smashed between the hulls.
Well, guess we better get started.
You're first.
No one spoke. Wright stepped toward the tittering plank and stood there. Then he staggered on halfway across. The gale lifted the ship, but Wright lunged forward and stumbled aboard the vessel, where he collapsed. Back on the Cochino, the men followed Wright's example. The vessel was listing badly, and her stern was almost submerged. One by one, the men waited for the proper moment, then dashed across the narrow plank. Finally, everyone was over there except the chief torpedoman, Woodward, and the skipper. Then Woodward made it. As the captain stepped toward the plank, the Cochino's bow pointed toward the air. The axemen on the Tusk began to chop away the straining mooring lines. The sinking motion of the Cochino brought the ships a few feet closer, and miraculously for a moment, the plank stayed steady. Every person aboard the Tusk shouted, "Now!" Commander Benitez ran across. As he reached the Tusk, the plank fell down between the ships. The Cochino's bow shot into the air, and the ship slid under the surface. arrest and hospitalization, both crews rode the Tusk back to the United States subbase at New London, Connecticut. Lieutenant Commander Wright is convalescing from his burns and is coming along fine. The two commanding officers, Commanders Robert Worthington and Rafael Benitez, wrote a full report of the cruise. Some of the report was confidential because of the secret equipment on the subs. But at the end, they listed the men whose heroism and devotion to duty they particularly noted.
Lieutenant Commander Cook, Gudermuth, Norman Walker, Sugar, Henry McFarland, Lieutenant Commander Wright, Lieutenant J.G. Cushman, Roush, Balthrop, Spann, Woodward, Whitman, Payne, Robert Davis, Feeden, and Haney.
These are the men of the submarine service, the Duffy service. The Snorkel fleet has grown and improved, and as it progresses to full capacity, they will go hand in hand with it the development of new submarine engines and weapons. The United States Navy is now working with the Atomic Energy Commission on the development of an atomic-powered submarine engine. This engine is still far off, but when it is completed, as it someday will be, the men of the United States Navy stand ready to put it to the test. They will be like the men of the Cochino and the Tusk, of whom their captain said,
"These men stand out in our memory. No doubt there were others who inconspicuously performed deeds worthy of special consideration. To them, we apologize for our failure to observe their conduct and for not singling them out. Their reward, if they feel they need any, they must find in their own hearts. And when duty called, they were not found wanting."
You have just heard This Is the Story, starring Scott Brady as Quartermaster Stroh and John Kellogg as the captain in Arctic Miracle. John Daner was Commander Wright. Others in the cast were Jack Crucian, Sid Miller, Ken Mayer, Robert Hunter, Jack Carroll, Harry Bartell, Marvin Bryan, Gary Goodwin, Norman Evans, Bob Arnold, and Bob Lynch. Original music was composed by John Hicks with musical direction by Michelle Perrier. Arctic Miracle was written for This Is the Story by Henry Cavell, produced and directed by Will Scott. Speaking. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.